main thing that got me out to vote today is I think this election is polarizing people so much. I think it's important that everyone comes out and really votes how they feel.
Well, I'm feeling very relieved. I just came out to exercise my right to vote.
Tired, but I got up and I came out and did it, so everybody should.
It's Election Day. Those are the voices of some voters in Central Illinois who came out to vote at Meadowbrook Community Church in Champaign this morning. We'll check in with county clerks across the state to hear how voting's going so far. Also, we talked to an Abraham Lincoln historian about the Springfield origins of the GOP elephant symbol. Plus, we meet a suburban Chicago teenager who just got back from a red carpet event in Hollywood, where she got to see the movie Doctor Strange, meet movie stars, and receive mentorship from the women scientists and engineers who work at Marvel and Disney.
It was nice to hear that being in STEM wasn't just a straight shot. You could blend what your interest with science.
That's all coming up this hour on the 21st. Stay tuned.
The main thing that got me out to vote today is I think this election is polarizing people so much. I think it's important that everyone comes out and really votes how they feel.
I feel pretty good. I'm glad I made the choices I made, and I think everybody should get out and vote and be informed and make a good decision.
I voted early because it was my first federal election as an American, and I thought I was going to avoid the polling stations, but I came to get some stickers for my kids.
Well, I'm feeling very relieved. I just came out to exercise my right to vote. Either way, whatever happens, God has it in control.
It's a gloomy day.
Tired, but I got up and I came out and did it, so everybody should.
Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've made it to Election Day. This long, difficult campaign season is finally coming to a resolution. Those were a few voters this morning at Meadowbrook Community Church in Champaign. Thanks to our producer, Christine Herman, for that audio. Today on the 21st, we're going to be checking in with how the vote's going, talking to poll watchers, and reminding you of your rights as a voter today. We've also got a great story for you from an Abraham Lincoln historian about the Springfield origins of the GOP elephant symbol. But first, let's start with turnout. We're going to go around the state and check in with clerks from Cook, Champaign, and Coles County. Let's start with Coles County in East Central Illinois. Joining us now from Charleston is Clerk Sue Reynolds. Welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
It's good to be talking to you, Nyla.
I know you're in your office. What kind of calls have you been getting from voters today?
Are we registered and where do I vote?
And you, because of the size of Coles County, you actually don't have same-day registration, correct?
We are registering in Coles County.
Okay. Oh, so you do have one same. Do you have, is there one location that's available for you guys? Is that how it works?
No, I have two.
Oh, you
one
two?
And one here in Charleston at the courthouse.
Oh, great. And what's turnout been like so far today?
For the same-day registration or polling or voting at the polling site?
What are you seeing with same-day registration? Are you seeing quite a few people turning up and asking
We're
to register today?
Steady. I'm anticipating more as the day goes on. In the spring, we saw a lot that was Eastern students, and seems like they do better coming out more in the afternoon. So, But we've had a couple hundred so far this morning. And
Sue Reynolds, what was your early voting like for Coles County? Were you seeing a lot of people come out and do early voting?
Yeah. Oh, I was very impressed and excited. We see more and more every election, but of course, the presidential is going to bring more out. But we had about 21% of our registered voters, about 6,500, and we've got almost 32,000 registered voters.
Wow. And, you know, it's slightly rainy outside today here in Champaign. And I know that some voters we talked to this morning described it as gloomy. Is your weather affecting your turnout at all down in Charleston?
I kind of wondered about that a little bit. Plus, we have had the early voting going on. So that tells me maybe people wait until they get off work. And, you know, but it's been very steady. It's been and busy right off at 6 o'clock. I think voters thought there was going to be long lines, but it's been very manageable.
That's Sue Reynolds. She's with Coles County, the clerk there, joining us as we can hear from their very busy office. Thanks for taking the time to be with us, Sue.
It's a pleasure.
Let's go now to Champaign. Gordy Holton is a Champaign County clerk and on the line with us. Gordy Holton, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
We heard last night there was almost a 2-hour wait for early voting at the clerk's office. What was that like yesterday evening, and what did we see with early voting totals for Champaign County, Gordy?
So our early voting totals right now are over 38,000 voters. Normal presidential election turnout for us overall is about 80,000 voters. So we're almost halfway into our normal voter turnout before any election day ballots have been cast.
And how would you see that reflected today? Are you seeing still a steady stream of people? Do you think that maybe a lot of people voted early? Maybe you're not seeing as many people today. What have you guys seen so far?
Well, that's the big question for this election is, did our massive numbers of early voters spread out the normal turnout that we get, or is it going to reflect an increase at the end of today? And right now, I think it's still too early to say.
Mm-hmm. I know you joined us last week to talk about voters' rights. Have there been any issues or any that you all have dealt with today at the polls in Champaign County?
We've gotten a couple calls about what people thought might be inappropriate electioneering. Our election judges were on the spot and took care of the issues. And when I visited the polling places to follow up, everything had been resolved.
Gordy, I wanted to ask you about state budget cuts, because we've heard, in the run-up to the election, how much state budget cuts may have affected individual clerks' office. Has that affected the way your office has worked so far this season? Has it been tough to prepare for this election?
Oh, absolutely. We were, I think, underprepared for the massive turnout we had in the primary election, and that resulted in longer lines than we're used to here in Champaign County. So immediately after that election, I had to go to our county board and ask for about a 10% increase in our annual budget to do what we felt were adequate preparations for this November's election. Those preparations are in place largely to address the state mandates on Election Day registration and some other things. And of course, the state of Illinois has provided no funding for us to comply with any of those new laws.
How has same-day registration gone? Are you seeing a lot of folks asking for that today in Champaign County, Gordy?
So far today, it's been sort of steady everywhere. We have three universal voting locations in Champaign County, two of them on campus and then our office, where anyone in the county can register or vote. And those places have been doing the steadiest stream of Election Day registrations.
That's Gordy Holton. He's Champaign County Clerk, taking time for us on a very busy day for us. Thanks so much for joining us, Gordy.
My pleasure.
Now let's go to Cook County, our largest county, and David Orr, clerk there. David Orr, welcome to the 21st.
How you doing?
How are you, David? I know you've been talking about record turnout for our largest county in the state. What's the final tally you're seeing for early voting in Cook County?
Early voting, remember, I'm talking only about suburban Cook. That's my jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
In suburban Cook, we had 130,000 more early voters than 4 years ago. That's a 57.5% increase.
Wow.
Knock your socks off.
Yeah.
Okay? We're also going to break a record number of people voting by mail. Furthermore, it's going very strong today. We've had more than 250,000 people vote already, averaging about 55,000 people an hour. So, yes, we know there's enormous interest in voting ahead of Election Day, but I suspect from what I'm seeing, again, I can't say for sure like my colleagues can't, I suspect we're going to have a really very strong turnout.
And so that's because that is the question that we were just asking with Champaign mm-hmm. County. It's the question everyone's asking around the country. Are early voting totals going to impact the amount of people that we're seeing turn out on Election Day as more people, as you said, are voting by mail, are taking advantage of early voting locations? Your sense is, David Orr, so far for today for suburban Cook County, that's not the case because it sounds like you're seeing, as you said, pretty long lines or lots of people turning out a steady stream?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm following you. What I'm suggesting is not only are we breaking records with early voting in mail, I believe it's going to lead to a higher turnout, period, from what I can see so far.
Okay, so in other words, it seems like it isn't that people are early voting and not showing up. It's just more people voting is what you're saying.
Yes. Early voting being so far up, there's no doubt that people want to vote early. There's an intensity to this election that perhaps I haven't seen. And that explains, I think, the people voting early. Also, as people are more aware of it, that's a factor. The parties and candidates pushing people to vote early, all those are factors. Also, remember, part of our new law is we had people voting in some cases till 7 o'clock in early voting last week. And we had early voting on Monday, yesterday, and we broke a record there. It's probably not the best idea to have early voting on the Monday before the election. but in fact, it was record numbers of people that voted.
David, are you seeing any issues being reported at polls so far in Cook County?
Well, let's see. So far, it's been pretty darn good. You know, all the polling places opened. We lost maybe 200 or 300 judges in the last few days. But it seems like, what I can tell, they've been replaced. There have been a few places where it was only 4 judges, but they seem to be able to handle it. I did hear a couple reports about judges giving people only one ballot. Remember, in Cook County, you can vote either on touchscreen or on paper ballot. In the suburbs, people prefer the touchscreens, but we don't always have enough so everyone can vote on that. But so I did hear a couple reports where judges mistakenly only gave a voter one ballot. And, of course, they voted for president, but they didn't give them the ballot with the retention judges. So that we're just looking into is to those, you know, certain, there's always going to be certain things that are human behavior. Our judges are great, but sometimes people make a mistake.
In 200, how many election judges are there in suburban Cook County? It seems like 200 is a lot to lose, David.
Oh, we lost 700 if you go back a couple of weeks. It always happens that way. We did about 9,000, but in this case, we did extraordinarily hard work to get extra people. And we got lots of students, of course, through the student judge program. And so at least today we had a pool. We had some extra ones. So as far as I can tell, we're all right there, like I say, that people showed up, et cetera. But we always lose some. And this time I think we did a better job at being prepared for those losses.
One last question for you, David. You mentioned that it's kind of tough to have early voting the day before the election. Why is that for you guys?
Well, remember, I'm the original author of early voting, so I obviously support it. And, you know, I want as many opportunities for people. But, of course, if Sunday was the last day, people would come out. If Saturday was the last day. When you get to Monday, and I can't speak for my colleagues, but I guess we all have the same problem, we've got early voting judges, hundreds and hundreds of them, that didn't get home till 9 or 10 o'clock last night. They've worked 2 straight weeks. They've worked Sundays and Saturdays. They've worked till late in the evening. And these people, into the hundreds, okay, hundreds and hundreds of them, they all got to show up to the polling places by 5 o'clock the next morning. Then you've got the whole issue, and the media, of course, always wants an early count. Now, we will have lots of ballots that we may not be able to retrieve in time. Remember, so we're out there gathering the cartridges from these thousands of touchscreens. Okay, sometimes they're not done voting until 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock last night. So, again, I'm not trying to feel sorry for ourselves, see what I mean? But the integrity of the election is always the most important thing. And early voting is great. I think it's proven to be a great success. Whether or not it should be on the last day, that's another question, because of the challenges it creates for jurisdictions and making sure the integrity is okay.
That's Cook County Clerk David Orr joining us, as all of the clerks have, on your busiest day of the year. Thank you for taking the time to be with us, David Orr.
You bet. Thanks for the coverage.
Let's go now to Ami Gandhi. She's the Director of Voting and Civic Empowerment with the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. Ami, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Great to be with you.
How many phone calls has your group been taking so far this morning? I know you run, you're part of the national hotline that people are calling in to report issues that they have.
Yes, we've had hundreds of legal volunteers answering phone calls that have been ringing off the hook. We've been here since 5 a.m. in our call center. We have attorneys out in the field as well doing nonpartisan poll monitoring, and we've received, even just only over the phone, over 250 calls already just from Illinois voters. We also actually take Indiana calls. We take inquiries from our volunteers who are out in the field, but we have received 250 calls just from Illinois voters calling us directly with questions and issues at the polls.
And what is there common issues that you're hearing from people?
Some of the patterns that we've been hearing include polling places opening late, with some places having election judges being totally absent at the time that the polling location should have opened. We also have been hearing numerous reports about machine errors, including ballot scanners, touch screens, other types of machines, electronic poll books, other types of machines. And the functional outcome of that means that some people are completely prevented from voting or are uncomfortable about the voting process, or in the case of people with disabilities or certain other populations of people who need access to certain types of machines are unfortunately being turned away from the polling location. And in addition to some of the technical snafus and the machine errors that are happening, we're also noticing from the reports from voters that there's a certain amount of human error going on too, with many of the election judges not being familiar with the equipment at the polls, not knowing how or having access to codes that they need to enter in order to get the machines to work properly. And so that's been a large problem as well, that's led to people being prevented from having access to these machines and technology, and ultimately from having access to vote. We also have been hearing from voters about improper requests for ID. Remember, in Illinois, we typically should not need to show an ID in order to vote, as long as we are properly registered. Yet there are places all over the state where voters have been improperly asked for ID. We also have been hearing about voters who are having particular barriers due to a disability or being limited English proficient. And again, that includes people being turned away from the polls, even though all people who are eligible voters, all people who are citizens, should have the right to vote regardless of the health condition, disability, or comfort in speaking in or in voting in English. I want to mention a couple other things. One voter.
Sure. I mean, can I stop you for a second just because we've got to take a break? So if you want to hold on just a second, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. Ami Gandhi is the director of voting and civic empowerment with the Voting Rights Project. She's talking to us about calls that have come into their hotline today as the polls have been open for Election Day. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Our special Election Day coverage continues. It's Election Day. You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. My guest is Ami Gandhi. She's the Director of Voting and Civic Empowerment with the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. She's been telling us about reports that have been made to a national hotline that she works with, 866-OUR-VOTE. It's where people can call with questions and concerns. They've been doing that all throughout voting and, of course, on early voting and for Election Day. I mean, you were just talking about some of reports that have been made. It sounded to me like, and correct me if I'm wrong, these sound like typical calls that you're getting on Election Day. Is there a sense that you are seeing anything unusual in terms of reports? I think we oftentimes see polling places not opening, election judges. Anything ringing alarm bells for you on this Election Day?
The volume is definitely a concern. The number of people from many different neighborhoods who have been disenfranchised because of these machine errors or election judge errors is very concerning. We are not actually accustomed to having this many problems in the city of Chicago and in other places that voters are calling us from. I want to stress, too, that if and when we are in communication with the election officials, many of these problems are solvable. So they are egregious. They can mean the difference between someone having the right to vote or not having the right to vote. But yet they are solvable issues if we all can be in touch promptly. So just as an example, last night during a huge overcrowded early voting site closing and having many people in line, there were concerns that young voters of color had about voter intimidation, about the overcrowding, about making sure they could get in the door in time to vote, given the extremely long line and the fact that the polls were closing soon. And we came out there. We as Chicago Lawyers Committee came out to the poll, the early voting site. We talked to voters. We talked to Chicago Board of Elections officials. And together we solved the problem. And it actually led to a great resolution of a situation that could have been very intimidating and that started out as intimidating for people of color. And it was a great example of how if we are in communication, we can often solve the problems together. However, when there's a communications breakdown and we can't get through to election officials, we can't figure out how to troubleshoot on the spot, that's when it makes the difference between whether a person has the right to vote or not.
With higher turnout expected, we saw two-hour waits last night in Champaign County at the clerk's office. I know there were reports of people who waited for hours, as you were mentioning, within the city of Chicago. What are the procedures around staying open later tonight or making sure that everyone can vote? What's the law on that?
If someone is in line at 7 p.m. in Illinois, then that person has the right to vote today, even if it takes a while for that line to be completed and for every person in that line to actually get inside the polling place to a voting station. So it's important for everyone to remember that if, as long as you are in line by 7 p.m., you have the right to vote. There are some places where people are confused about that, so everyone should make sure to know their rights. If there are places that opened later because of election judges not showing up, because of technological difficulties, because of other circumstances, we advocate for those locations to stay open later so that voters have full access to the full range of voting hours and options. Many people were not able to stay at the polling place until a delayed time when it opened because they had to go to work, they had other responsibilities. And so we are still looking at our legal options as far as trying to advocate for a polling place to be open later in the evening because it did not open on time in the morning.
Ami Gandhi is the Director of Voting and Civic Empowerment with the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
We wanted to also give you all a firsthand look at what goes on for all the people who are volunteering at polling places throughout Illinois today. In the Chicago area, at least 220 students and faculty members from Northwestern University are volunteering, either as poll observers or volunteers. One of those is law student Beau Trimatier. He's joining us now from the north side of Chicago at Morrill Elementary School. Hey, Beau, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with us this election day.
Thanks for having me.
What's your job today as a poll watcher?
So I'm doing a lot of what Ami described. I am serving as a nonpartisan poll monitor here at several precincts down in West Englewood. And so what that requires of me is to be on site and to be there to help troubleshoot alongside the election judges and other election officials, identify issues that arise, and help solve things on site when that's possible. And if things were to escalate or to be beyond my ability to fix, to call back in to the headquarters, to the hotline, and find a way to ensure that the problem is remedied. So it's a great collaborative experience so far. Really grateful that this is a precinct where election judges are working hard and everyone is working together to ensure that voting rights are respected and that everyone who should have an opportunity to vote is getting an opportunity.
And so, Beau, just want to make clear, are you on the, you said you were in West Englewood, so you're on the south side of the city?
Yes.
Okay. And are you in a specific precinct there?
I am. So there are two precincts within the same polling place. And so two desks set up and voters come in and they're from, one part of the neighborhood or another part of the neighborhood and they come in and put into one line or the other. And it's moving pretty well. We've had some of the issues that Ami described earlier, some issues with the ballot scanner that caused a hold up and added some length to the line and the electronic voting machine has been a little finicky, but on the whole, we've called in some of the county election official technicians to help us out and things are humming along right now.
And how did you become a poll observer? What kind of training did you have to do?
This is a several hour training put on by the Chicago Lawyers Committee and some of the other partners involved in election protection. And that thoroughly goes through the relevant election law here in Illinois, some of the best practices, common issues that we'd encounter. There also is a volunteer manual that we have on site with us to be able to reference specific provisions of the law or, again, some of those commonly raised problems. And I'm also pulling a little bit on my experience of having done this for several elections prior to this year's seeing some of the similar issues that we've seen before, hoping things continue to get cleaned up as the day goes along.
Now, we last had you on the 21st because you were advocating for the cancellation of law school classes on Election Day. What kind of response did you get from schools outside of Northwestern University across the state?
So we didn't see any school make the same institutional commitment that Northwestern Law made, but we saw some encouraging progress. We saw some schools offer more lenient excused absences if they were to be missing class for voting or volunteering. We saw some schools consider and record lectures that were occurring on Election Day. We saw individual professors canceled their classes and encouraged students in their classes to go out and participate. So nothing that matches the full institutional commitment that we saw from Northwestern. And I think that's a big reason why we have over 200 people volunteering around Cook County and in some of the other collar counties. But again, encouraging signs from other schools, and I feel confident that looking to 2018 and 2020, we'll see what Northwestern did become commonplace across the state.
But what do you hope that students who are volunteering from today walk out with from this experience, your law school colleagues that are with you?
I think it's really showing that what we've learned in the classroom a couple hours a day for 3 years in a row is real, not abstract. Voting rights are not something you read about. They're something that people exercise. And I think days like today, being all across the city, seeing some of the hurdles that many of our communities face to exercise their right, I think really breathes life into conversations held in stuffy wooden classrooms. And I think it's really important that we remember why we chose to be lawyers and why we want to be in the legal profession. And I can't think of a better way to learn that lesson than spending Election Day out there serving.
Bo Tremeteer is the editor-in-chief of Northwestern University's Law Review. He's a student at Northwestern and a volunteer poll observer, as you heard today, doing nonpartisan poll work. Bo, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We'll forgive you if you don't remember this fact, but Abraham Lincoln was actually elected to his second presidential term 152 years ago today. President Lincoln's legacy is still recognizable in many ways, but he actually has one that you may not know about, ties to the Republican Party's elephant symbol. Joining us now from Springfield, Illinois, is historian Ian Hunt of the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library. He found that GOP symbol has ties to newspaper coverage of Lincoln's presidential campaigns and may actually originate from a newspaper in Springfield. Ian, thank you for joining us on the 21st. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
I think we often think of political cartoonist Thomas Nast being credited with the creation of both the elephant and the donkey as the two main symbols for the Republican and Democratic Party, but you recently found something that may show otherwise. How did you first start to look into this?
I was asked in my role at the museum if I could do some research on a fairly famous photograph of Abraham Lincoln that was taken on August the 8th of 1860, with Mr. Lincoln actually standing on the front steps of his home here in Springfield and a huge crowd that had gathered on the front steps and on the street in front. During the course of that research, I decided to take a look at the newspapers the following day to see if by chance any of the reporters may have mentioned that this photograph was taken or may have given any background on it, which was when we came across this cartoon.
And why do you think this cartoon was used? Why was there an elephant drawn? Why do you think that first came about?
Well, we went back and looked, and it's interesting because, of course, they had not used an elephant before. The symbology that they had used, it included cannons, it included eagles, all of the traditional symbols of patriotism that we think of today. But when you read the descriptions that were given by the reporters who had witnessed this rally, it was at the time billed as the largest rally held in the western United States. It was believed that as many as 80,000 people had shown up in Springfield for this Republican rally. And the descriptors that they use, they talk about the strength and the power. They actually said that it was a veritable political earthquake and that a larger or more magnificent political demonstration had never been seen. And so it makes sense from a writer's perspective that the way to capture in people's imaginations the strength and the energy of this rally is to pick what is the largest land animal on the earth, the most powerful, theoretically the most strongest animal in existence.
And so we tweeted out a picture. If you followed 21ST show, I tweeted out a picture earlier of this article, and it has an elephant, and the elephant's carrying a banner that says, "We are coming, clear the track." And as you said, Ian, you're right. The headline says, "A political earthquake, exclamation point. The prairies on fire for Lincoln, another exclamation point." And this is, I love the four headlines of these newspapers. "The biggest demonstration ever held in the West, another exclamation point. 75,000 Republicans in council." Why do you think that so it makes sense that why the elephant was used here. Did we then start to see this being used more often after this? This was the first instance that you believe you found.
Yeah, we tracked back through the 1856 John C. Fremont election because we were curious to see whether the elephant was tied to the Republican Party automatically from its inception. And we were unable to locate any reference whatsoever to John C. Fremont during his campaign and the elephant. I think that with the reason it sticks with Lincoln is not only, as we've already talked about, with the power of this massive campaign rally in Springfield, but interestingly, we know that Mr. Lincoln's vice presidential running mate, Hannibal Hamlin, we know that there were people in 1860 who were playing off of Hannibal Hamlin's name, and they were talking about the fact that they were holding signs, actually, that said Hannibal Hamlin, the first man to show the elephant to the Democrats. And they were playing off of the famous Carthaginian general Hannibal, who during the Second Punic War in 218.
Ah, okay, that makes sense. Right.
Had marched an army across the Alps into Italy and had been accompanied by war elephants. So we think that probably it was kind of tongue in cheek by the editors of the Illinois State Journal when they did this. But to answer your question, we find that literally within weeks, there are references to the elephant. There are imagery of the elephant that are being used as far afield as Pennsylvania. If it happens once, it might be considered an anomaly. But when you can find clear patterns that other locations, other newspapers have picked up this symbol of the elephant as being representative of the Republicans, it really is when you begin to see this pattern growing.
Ian, I know the Democratic donkey symbol predates the Republican Party's elephant symbol by a couple of decades. Do you think the Republican Party thought they needed an animal symbol to match the Democratic donkey?
I don't know that they necessarily sat down and said, guys, we have to find
we have to have an animal. They have an animal. Right.
I think that it's probably a number of things that all kind of come together at the same time. I think that the fact that Lincoln's running mate is named after a famous general who uses war elephants. I think the popularity of Mr. Lincoln, both in 60 and 64, and then, of course, immediately after his assassination, the huge meteoric rise in popularity he had. I think that the fact that you have combat soldiers at the time who were talking about, they used the phrase, seeing the elephant, as a way to describe those who have actually been in combat and have seen the horrors of war. I think that all of these things kind of coalesce together at almost the exact same moment. I don't think Republican strategists just sat down one day and said, we need an animal, what can we get?
Okay. Well, it is an interesting, we just have about a less than a minute left here, Ian, but just really quickly, it is interesting, this history that you've uncovered. Do you think that now we can sort of change the narrative that it wasn't necessarily Thomas Nast who created it, but this Springfield paper?
I think the fact that it's tied to Mr. Lincoln, that it would certainly give a story like that more legs. It needs to get out there. It needs to be better understood that this is a symbol that had been in existence for 14 years when Thomas Nast began drawing his cartoons for Frank Leslie's Illustrated. So,
thanks for that, historian Ian Hunt, on this election day, and I guess we could say the 152nd anniversary of President Lincoln being elected to a second term in office, giving us some new information and shedding new light on the Republican Party GOP elephant symbol. Ian Hunt is a historian with the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library in Springfield. Ian, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Let's take a break from election coverage for a little bit and talk about something else. A Naperville teen got to step out onto the red carpet at the Hollywood premiere of Doctor Strange last week. It was all because of a video she submitted about her research at Argonne National Labs. Amani Porter is just a sophomore at Neuqua Valley High School, but she's already doing research at Argonne and earned her way to the Doctor Strange movie premiere by submitting a video entry about that research to Marvel Studios' contest. It was called Doctor Strange the magic of STEM Challenge. STEM, of course, stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. And she's with us now to talk about that experiment and her that experience and her involvement in the research that got her there. Imani, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You got to go onto a red carpet. You're 15. For those of us who have never been to a red carpet event in Hollywood before, let alone walked one like you did, what was that like?
It was really exciting. I wasn't used to all the cameras, and I got to see a couple stars, and that was exciting.
What did you wear?
I wore a brown chevron dress with like silver sparkly shoes and like a silver jacket cover up. So,
and who did you meet while you were there?
Well, I got to meet the people who made the movie, like the directors and producers and writers. And I also got to meet, of course, the stars, Benedict Cumberbatch and Rachel McAdams. So that was exciting.
It sounds exciting. Now, I want to ask, what was your first thought when you stepped out onto the red carpet? Were you nervous?
I wasn't nervous. I was more excited because I'd never experienced this. It was, I mean, I saw like the poster boards everywhere and his Lamborghini was out on the red carpet. It was, I was more awed. I was more in awe than anything else.
Are you a big Marvel fan, Imani?
Yeah, I like Marvel.
And so as so this must have been a really cool experience. Who's your favorite movie star? Do you have a favorite movie star who was also a Marvel character who was there?
Yeah, I saw Robert Downey Jr. and I'm a fan of Iron Man.
I was going to say Iron Man's your favorite. Okay.
Yeah.
And are you a fan of Benedict Cumberbatch? Because this is kind of an interesting Marvel role that he's playing here.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of his shows and things like that. So I've seen him before, so it was exciting to see a familiar face.
And the cool thing about this was you met stars, and we talked about that, but you also got to meet several women who work at Marvel in STEM. Who did you get to meet?
I got to meet people who were Imagineers, people who worked with how the production of movies that they make, and pretty much all the background that we never really see, but they're really important roles. And you wouldn't really think that there'd be a lot of STEM roles in just movie production, because you just think it's, oh, it's the actors and the director, but it's more than that. There's people who have to do the math for an explosion or things like that.
And so that's kind of a cool thing to think about, too. I mean, Imagineers, I know they make rides for Disneyland and Disney World. So it sounds like there's probably a lot of engineering in that. For you, was it kind of an interesting experience to realize, for someone who's already in STEM and doing research in high school, that this might be another career path for you also, it sounds like?
Yeah. One thing that they talked to us about was that you could kind of blend your interests. And I like that you could have more options, like you don't just have one choice. You have multiple things that you could put together to make the career that you want.
So you got to do this because you were one of the five finalists for the Doctor Strange Magic of STEM Challenge. In your video submission, you talked about your research you've done on bacteria and hair. What's that all about?
Well, there's microbes in general live on and within our body, and they impact our body by pretty much making it function right. And sometimes, there's good and bad microbes, and my study was to look at how these microbes influence the scalp environment.
Wow. And I know you had to emphasize how you're going from, say, the magical to practical, a little bit of what we've been talking about, right? How do you hope to do that in the research that you're doing right now on microbiomes in hair?
Well, the magical part is that everybody's different. And, you know, everyone takes or uses different products on their hair to do what they want it to do. So if one person were to use some shampoo to make their hair grow, and it made their hair grow, and they recommended it to their friend, and their friend's hair didn't do anything, everybody's scalp environment is different, and because of this, it could affect, or the shampoo could affect the microbes differently. So that's the magical part, because the same product could have different results for different people. So the practical part is that, I mean, everybody who has hair uses some type of product to style it or wash it or things like that.
That's interesting. So we've been talking with Amani Porter. She's a sophomore at Naqua Valley High School in Naperville. And I want to bring another person into this conversation. Amani's mentor at Argonne National Lab, Jared Hampton Marcel, is the research coordinator at Argonne National Lab. He's also a PhD candidate at UIC. Jared, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good. I know your research, we've talked to you about this in the past. It's all about the microbiome and its role in health. What are the big questions you're trying to answer? And it sounds like Amani's research is one little piece of this.
Yeah, so one of the big questions we're always trying to answer is basically how the environment influences kind of like your genomic profiles, and then basically trying to feed into, like, your precision medicine initiative is, can you create kind of applied techniques to kind of remediate these situations, not from a general standpoint, but more from an individualistic standpoint of looking at differences not only in the environment, but also their genetic makeup, and basically coming up with differential treatment plans.
So, Amani, Jared is your mentor at Argonne. What kind of things do you guys do together?
Well, we plan out what the experiment will be, and he helps guide me through pretty much the whole research process, which is making my figures to help explain what correlations I find between what the question I want to answer and the bacteria or the microbes present. And he's really a big help in this whole thing, because
it sounds like there are a lot of really tough questions you're trying to answer, right, with your research. Yeah. And so, Jared, I know what you do. You guys are, so what Amani's working on is enrolling different research participants, healthy people, and people who have alopecia, and you guys are studying the difference in bacteria and their hair. I mean, how important, when you're thinking about this, it sounds like it's a really complex experiment that you put together. Jared, how important is it for young scientists to have mentors and people to help guide them through the process?
I think it's essentially vital. Reason being is that you have young individuals like Amani who always have these really big ideas, and most of the time they don't have the background to kind of act on them. So having somebody who understands what they're trying to do, what they're trying to answer, and then giving them guidance on how to systematically go about that is just extremely beneficial, because it kind of gives you a different perspective than having to, like, listen to your parents all the time or listen to a teacher, where basically the student has just as much input as the mentor that's actually giving him or her advice.
Amani, what's been the most valuable part of for you of the mentorship and having Jared help you?
Being exposed to research has really helped me to find where I want to go in my future, and having him there is very beneficial. I wouldn't be able to do any of this without any of his guidance. It would be extremely difficult, because I wouldn't have the resources to or understanding to do all of this.
Well, and it sounds like you're doing a lot as a 15-year-old sophomore. This is a big research project that you're engaged in. Jared, for you, I wonder, you're a PhD candidate at UIC. How important a role did mentors play in your career?
Oh, man, it was extremely, extremely beneficial. One of my biggest mentors is Dr. Kevin Jackson, who's actually a neuroscientist down there at Urbana.
Oh, yes, he has been a guest on the 21st. He does research on football concussions. Sure.
Yeah, we grew up in the same neighborhood. So growing up, watching him not only play sports, but also be involved in science and doing research and getting his PhD and seeing the stuff that he's doing that ultimately goes back to, like, his passion for sports, really shaped me and really had a profound impact on kind of me not only wanting to continue that trend, but also wanting to give back. And a lot of things that I see in Kevin was the way I see myself as for Amani as well, because I see her as athlete. She's doing research. She's in gymnastics. She's in these different clubs. She's constantly busy. So just being there to say, you know, you can calm down. You don't have to do all this. But she's so focused and so adamant. It just makes me want to work harder.
And how do you go about? And I guess I wonder how you go about mentoring students. Imani, have you? You haven't quite decided yet, particularly what field of you do want to go into a STEM field, correct?
Yeah.
But you haven't quite decided yet what your focus is going to be, have you?
Well, I mean, I've mainly been focusing on biology. I've always been interested in biology. I just don't know specifically where I want to go in biology.
Sure. And I wonder now that you've had this experience out in Hollywood and you've been able to see people who have taken science and technology and engineering math, use that and use that for creating art, has that made you think about other possibilities of what you might want to go into?
I don't know. I still need to figure out how my interests can be blended with my passion for biology. I still need to figure out where I want to go.
Well, you've got plenty of time, Imani. I forgot to ask, and I should ask both of you. Imani, did you like the movie? How was Doctor Strange?
Oh, yeah, I liked the movie. It was really good.
Jared, I didn't ask you if you're a Marvel fan.
I am, but I haven't seen the movie yet.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank both of you guys for joining us. Imani Porter is a sophomore at Neuqua Valley High School in Naperville. She was one of the finalists for the Marvel Studios contest sponsored by Disney, why she got to go to the premiere. Imani, thanks for joining us to talk about your research.
Thank you for having me.
I want to thank Jared Hampton Marcel as well. He's a research coordinator at Argonne National Labs. He's a PhD candidate at UIC, talking us to about the mentorship program as well as the work he's doing into microbiomes. Jared, great to talk to you as well.
Have a good day.
That's all the time we have for today. Don't forget to get out and vote. If you have any last-minute questions about ballot initiatives, you can head to our website, www.21stshow.org. We've got lots of information there. Yesterday's program, if you haven't voted yet, we've heard lots of language about some of the ballot initiatives. Might be a little confusing. The transportation lockbox, Safe Roads Amendment, all of that is at our website at www.21stshow.org. And you can stay tuned on air throughout the day for updates. You can also join me and the 21st team tonight. I'll be joining NPR's team coverage, providing the latest in Illinois election news from 7 o'clock tonight. We'll be checking in with Amanda Vinicky, Brian Mackey, former director of the Paul Simon Institute, David Yepsen, is going to be joining us as well, providing some analysis. Other political radio reporters throughout the state, that's starting at 7 o'clock tonight. You can also follow us throughout the day on social media. If you're on Twitter, our handle is 21stshow. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for the 21st. We're also available on iTunes and Android. All of those links, every other way to contact us, whether that's via phone, email, or social media, is at our website, 21stshow.org. If you want to follow us during the day, as I mentioned, our handle today is a good example of what we're doing. We'll be tweeting out news throughout the day. If you like us on Facebook, you can also see what we're reading and provide questions and comments for us to use on air. We're produced by Howla Delahi, Christine Herman, and Sean Newman. Technical direction comes from Jason Croft, with help today from Steve Mork. Scott Cameron is our news director. Thanks to Joe Yoon and Nick Vance from the University of Illinois' Social Media Analytics Lab for their research help. And as always, special thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Again, stay tuned throughout the day for the latest on election day news, and join us tonight for our special coverage, which begins at 7 o'clock. We'll have NPR's national coverage as well as local and state coverage of Illinois right here beginning at 7 o'clock. Have a great day. Get out and vote. Thanks for listening.